Support for the Sales Babble podcast comes from Slidebean. Slidebean allows you to create stunning, professionally designed sales decks in minutes, not hours. Over 2,500 sales professionals have used Slidebean's presentation tools to successfully pitch clients around the world. You can create a free account and start designing your sales decks today at slidebean.com/babble. Once you're ready to unlock your presentation, use offer code BABBLE to save 10% off your first purchase. Slidebean, presentations made simple.
I think that Americans don't realize the importance of business card etiquette.
No, in fact, a lot of people don't realize the value of business cards. This is the Sales Babble Podcast. How to Sell the World, an interview with Carl Weaver.
Welcome to Sales Babble, the podcast that shares selling secrets for non-sellers. And now your host, Pat Helmers.
Hello, Sales Babblers. This is Pat Helmers, and we are here for another week of sharing selling secrets for non-sellers. Today, our guest is Carl Weaver. Carl's an international sales professional, and he's a wealth of knowledge when it comes to how to sell the world. If you sell in Asia or if you sell in Europe, it's much different than in the US of A. But in both cases, sales only happen when it's built on trust. In this episode, Carl's going to walk through seven ways to sell in a protectionist environment. And the lessons here are particularly useful for those of you in enterprise sales. We're going to cut through all the babble. We're going to make this as simple as possible. Sales does not need to be intimidating. You can be successful in sales. This is a really fun conversation. Carl is a terrific guy. But before we do that, I want to tell you about how I've been preparing for a talk on search engine optimization. And I need to build a slide deck with about, 15 to 20 slides. Now, of course, I've been using Slidebean, and I'm really loving the new and easy-to-use interface. When creating a new slide deck, Slidebean offered me a set of templates on like startups, business, marketing, academic, and sales. And as you can guess, I chose the sales template, and I'm crafting a gorgeous presentation with clip art and professional photos and an easy-to-click URL link for my audience. You can do this too. In fact, if you go to today's show notes, I've included links to a few of my Slidebean presentations. Check them out. Create a free account and start designing your sales decks today at slidebean.com/babble. If you like it, all sales babblers get a free offer code of 10% off. Start creating stunning presentations today and get your free account. Slidebean, presentations made simple. So, with no further ado, let's get to it. Welcome, Carl. Are you ready to babble?
I am ready. We're in Babylon.
We're in Babylon. We are indeed. You and I met, I think it was in May, at the IoT World, and you are a vendor.
This is correct. I work for Simility Labs, which is an embedded SIM operating system designer. And my job is covering Asia Pacific, specifically the Chinese markets. I'm a China market specialist. I have been for close to 30 years. And we provide design in of the eSIM operating system to smartwatches, tablets, smartphones on the consumer side, connected cars on the internet of vehicles, and industrial applications as well.
It was a terrific conference. I learned a lot. It motivated me to do a bunch of new things here at work, and I really enjoyed it. But the thing that really stuck in my mind when it comes to you is that you and I started talking about China, because I was over in China last year, and
yes,
your experience in China, and you believe that selling, I believe that you believe that selling abroad is quite a bit different than selling here in the States, right?
It's much more complex, number one. It's more complex, number one. Number two, Americans are at a huge disadvantage because after China joined the WTO in 2001 or 2003, well, after they joined the WTO, American companies started to gut their manufacturing sector, especially in the Midwest, especially the car industry and other industries.
Yep,
and they transferred everything into China. Therefore, what they did is they removed all the international apparatus of international people who were trained overseas, language skills and cultural training with all of the global countries. And they shifted everything to China without really realizing what they were doing. And now it's come full circle. And I think a lot of them are realizing the huge mistakes that they made, just expecting China to just be a simple supplier and keep shut and just make products cheaply for the West. That is not what China's objectives were.
What is China's objectives? Why are they not just, why aren't they just the good vendor and building things according to spec?
Because they want to be number one, and they built a, quite honestly, unfortunately, they built a much to the chagrin of the West, they built a very protectionist ecosystem, especially in technology now, where they have built a great firewall of China, which keeps out YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, anything from Google, and even Vimeo, which is a harmless video streaming website. They keep out anything where the Westerner can gain advantage trying to sell into the Chinese markets. However, we allow all Chinese software companies, hardware companies to come in and to sell in the United States. So they protect and block their market for illogical reasons. And we are doing nothing. So it's not really equal trade. It's not fair and it's not equal.
I think that's it's an interesting thing because when I was in China, the story that I was told was the Great Firewall of China was really to try to keep the Chinese out of America and understanding what America and the news and all that. But I was really surprised when I got there. It's like you could get to practically any news site. What you're saying, it's the opposite. It's to stop advertising from getting into China.
It's to stop Westerners from gaining an advantage commercially. And it's a dichotomy because lots of these Chinese, especially video streaming companies, rely a lot on Western product advertising in order to fund their businesses. For example, Youku. When you go on Youku and you want to look at a video, either your own video or a video that's been uploaded by a company, you get at least three or four videos. A lot of it is Western videos, everything from selling bras to wine to Western candy. Is a combination of a lot of Western products, and the advertising is excellent now. But those Chinese vendors rely on the Western advertising for their business model. Yet they cannot. The Western companies cannot get through. With using social media in China, it's very, very complex.
Yeah, it's a poor country though, in some regards. The average person doesn't make very much. make very much a day, but they're not starving, and they look really healthy, and they love fashion.
Well, it's interesting. You note they actually make more money now than the Taiwanese do, and that's very interesting. The salaries have been stalled or basically have been stagnant in Taiwan for at least a decade, whereas China's salaries have been growing through the roof. And China is not a cheap place to live anymore. It's actually very expensive, more expensive to live in China than Seattle. So actually, the salaries are going through the roof, and that's why the manufacturing's moving to places like India, Indonesia, and Vietnam on the high-end manufacturing side. But that's okay. The Chinese will just move to robotics. But it's not a cheap place. That's the fallacy. It is not a cheap place. Actually, just basic survival in a place like Shanghai and Beijing, wow, it's really expensive.
Oh, yeah, those are pricey cities. Oh, yeah. So I think we've established here that you're an expert at this. So maybe you could give us some tips on what sellers can do to be successful in selling abroad in Asia.
Especially Asia. And China's not any different than some of the other countries because many of the countries have become a bit on the protectionist side. So you have to figure out that you're going to deal with a country that will have an agenda. They may say that they're welcoming Western companies to come in. What they really want is your technology, not necessarily your marketing arm. They want your technology. Sometimes they want to reverse engineer it. So it's really important that when you're going abroad, you understand this. You don't be naive about the whole thing. They want to build their countries and their companies into, first brand movers and shakers in their ecosystem. And that means direct competition to American companies. Absolutely direct competition. So when you're going abroad, you need to understand that, number one. You need to understand that loose lips sink ships. You need to protect all of your data when you're traveling into China, because it's easily stolen, even from your laptops, even from, because of all the spam and all the malware and antivirus, and the viruses inside China. So your information is very, very critical when you're trying to sell something into Asia. You have to protect what you have. You have to protect it with security. Somehow you need to protect it with security. That's number one. But when you're going into a foreign country, you really need to send people who have been trained with the language, the culture, and work experience in the region. This is very, very important. Unfortunately, I see it year after year. Western companies send people because they happen to be a technology specialist. They send them to Asia thinking that, well, you know, the Chinese all speak English. I don't have to speak Chinese. This is further from the truth. But this is the normal business mode from Westerners. The Chinese are going to expect you to speak Chinese more and more and more if you want to engage in any kind of business in the Chinese world. They're not always willing. There are lots of people who want to speak English, but they're not always willing to speak it simply because some people just aren't comfortable speaking English and they want you to speak their native tongue. And if you don't, then what? Then you're stuck. You're literally stuck at the table, at the negotiating table, because you decided that, you know what? I talked to Mr. Wong and he speaks English perfectly. Why is he now asking for a translator? Well, it's because, you know what? We all get tired of trying to speak a second language. The Chinese are no different.
This reminds me of an article I read the weekend before last about Hong Kong. And that the locals in Hong Kong were saying that more and more, there's a greater and greater expectation that they need to speak Mandarin. All banking used to be done in English, not anymore.
That's right. That's right. In the future, it will all be Mandarin. In the future, the Cantonese dialect will be silenced in Hong Kong, as it is really when you go to Shenzhen, China, just over the border. Really, people don't speak Cantonese. It's amazing. You go to Guangzhou, they do speak Cantonese often. You go to Shenzhen, very few people are speaking Cantonese. I mean, that's the situation. It's now extended to Hong Kong because the statistic is 60 to 80% of all the business that's being done through Hong Kong now is being done with Asian and especially Mandarin speakers, and only 20%. Or so with non-Mandarin speakers. So this is quite significant. They have to speak Mandarin. They've got no choice.
Yeah, they got no choice. So first one was they want your technology. Next was they want your data. The next was travel with locals. What's the fourth?
Basically, when you're traveling in Asia, it is a commonality that you need to give a little gift. It's not a bribe. You have to be strategic about it. Normally what I do is I bring, because I'm in Seattle, we have a few famous place things here. Normally what I bring is either, if it's Japan, I bring a Seattle Mariners baseball cap, or some Starbucks coffee, you know, just nice little gifts. If it's the Chinese world, I will bring almond roca, quite popular in Asia because it's only made in Washington State. They're $5 to $10. They're great gifts to give in Asia because the Asian people really love this stuff. You can't; it's not made in Asia, but in Hong Kong they sell this all the time. So, or I give a bottle of San Michele wine, usually either a Riesling or a fruity type wine. I usually give those two gifts, just simple gifts. After a meeting, if it's a vendor you want to impress, if it's a vendor you're doing business with. That's another really key thing to do. It's a simple gesture, but it means that you understand Asia when you're able to do those things, because it's expected to give a gift when you're traveling and doing business in Asia. It's expected. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah,
it's absolutely expected. Another thing is, when you're doing business, when you get to the negotiation table, you can't expect an immediate sale. So if you try to press for a sale, a hard sale, you can joke around about it saying, hey, so are you going to give me an order? This would be okay. In a joking manner and using humor is a really great tool if you know how to do it, especially in Mandarin. But if you try to do the hard sale, you know, hey, give me an order right now, that doesn't work in Asia. That doesn't work in the Chinese world. You need to tone it down, and you need to listen more, and you need to suggest if they're interested in the product, please ask me for a quotation, because they need time to think about it. They need time to make a decision. Many, many vendors don't make immediate decisions. And in America, when we travel into Asia, especially into China, it's almost like a used car sales mentality. You know, the used car salesman has you there in his showroom. He wants to make that immediate sale, because if you leave the showroom, your chances of coming back are slim. This is the American mindset. But that isn't how it works in Asia. It could take a few different visits to finally get a deal closed. And this is important to remember. You don't get immediate sales often when you haven't built the trust. So you need to build the trust. And some of the ways to build the trust are just having simple negotiations and discussions and asking them what they want. And after you've concluded what they want, then you give a conclusion, tell them, would you like a quotation? I'll be very happy to give you a price quote. It's a very different, it's called the subtle art of selling to Asia.
You know, enterprise sales are like this, even in the United States. It's going to take a half a dozen meetings, maybe more sometimes, in order for them to collectively make a decision whether or not to go with you as a vendor or not. So it requires a lot of patience. Strong-arming people. In this day and age, I just don't think you can do that anymore. With the age of the internet and the information that people have, it doesn't work. It doesn't work here in the States hardly anymore.
Right, especially, yeah, it doesn't. But I still see it happening because the salesperson has an ego sometimes. And I've seen situations where I bring Americans into meetings and they take their business card. And, you know, there's an art to providing the business card. I've seen them nonchalantly take their business card and fling it across the table.
Yeah.
You've already lost. You've lost the ball game.
No, you want to honor the card. You want to honor the business card. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really important.
It's really important, yes. And in fact, I kind of do that now, because sometimes I'll have someone do that and I'll go, you know, in China, that's not a very good thing to do. Or I'll say Asia, right? That's not a very – the same thing is true in Japan and in Korea. It's like, yeah.
I think it's also true in Europe. I think that Americans don't realize the importance of business card etiquette.
No, in fact, a lot of people don't realize the value of business cards. Well, look, you just text me your phone number. That'll be good enough. I'll put you in my contacts, and I'll have it.
No, doesn't work that way. You need. I always ask for a physical business card, because for me, I imprint a mental picture. Quite honestly, that's how I do it.
Yeah, I'm surprised the number of salespeople I bump into who don't have business cards on them at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm all out. Yeah, I'm like, dude, what kind of salesperson are you? I'll teasingly say that, but
but it's true. It's true. It's all about creating the trust. When you can't do that, then you are just a used car salesman, because used car salesman does not care about you after you leave his showroom.
Right.
It's just another person. So don't come off like a used car salesman. Don't come off as an aggressive person. These are, you know, really key points. And also, you've got to embrace social media, because everybody is now doing it, not just millennials. Everyone in Asia is using either Skype or WeChat.
Or LinkedIn.
Or LinkedIn.
Yeah, a lot of LinkedIn.
In China, they're starting to get better with LinkedIn because LinkedIn allows multilingual input. You can input Chinese, and the Chinese like that. And LinkedIn is the only social media that's kind of accepted by the Chinese government. So LinkedIn is a great way. And that's why when I do my public speaking, when I upload my videos, I upload them not just to YouTube or Youku. I also upload the hyperlink on LinkedIn. And when I make announcements of my public speaking, I will announce them in two different languages because I know the Chinese are watching and they will pay attention if the language is in Chinese. They will laser beam go right to that announcement. It will be a laser beam effect.
You know, I don't blame them. I mean, I'm that way myself, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm pouring through a whole bunch of what I consider a foreign language, and I see a little English. You just glom onto that.
That's right. It's the same way with the Chinese.
Yeah.
It's the same way with them. So these are some of the important things that you need to do when you're traveling abroad and trying to do business globally. You certainly want to give them a viewpoint that you're not a country bumpkin, and you understand international business etiquette and protocol. It's very, very, I think, very, very important. It's very different than America. And I have lived and worked on three continents. I spent a year living in Holland. I spent the first 7 years of my professional career in Taiwan selling to Europe. So I was actually straddling two different cultures other than my own.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really cool experience, living and working in Europe and also traveling a lot to Europe, even though I was using my Mandarin skills locally living and working in Taiwan. It was the best situation, quite honestly.
How's selling to Europe different from selling to Asia?
I think Europe is also conservative when it comes to introducing yourself and gaining the trust. I think it's quite similar to Asia. You have to gain the trust in order to work with the Europeans. The Europeans aren't interested in flashy American propaganda. They want substance. And it takes a while for you to build the trust and gain the support. You need to deliver substance. And also, they don't make quick decisions in Europe as well. Those decisions take time, and they're calculated decisions. That's, of course, when I lived and worked in Europe, I found living in Europe interesting after the first, for the first month or so, living in a very interesting cultural and historic settings. But I found it also boring after about a few months because you can only do so much window shopping. You can't do as much physical. You can't buy too many things in the weekends. The stores are closed early. You do lots more window shopping. Sometimes bread, which is normally fresh, is all out by 5 p.m. on a Saturday, and then you can't find milk either. This was the situation in Europe just about 10, 15 years ago because they don't have such convenience with huge supermarkets. No, they don't have huge supermarkets like we have here in North America.
What about the UK though? You know, I've interviewed many people from the UK. They don't seem that culturally. They seem very close to us.
No, I think the British have a very dry sense of humor, and I think that they have a very dry sense of humor.
Well, so do I though.
Yeah.
Maybe yeah. That's it. Maybe it's just me.
Theirs is like a dry martini. That's number one. Number two, they use the Queen's English more eloquently than we do in the West. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
It's just a fact.
Yeah.
And they can also be very conservative in their views. And their jokes tend to be very different than American jokes. I've seen so many situations where the British will make a joke and the American says, "I don't get it." And then the American makes a joke and the British people, they just think that that's really immature. And then, of course, just try going to Scotland. It's almost like traveling to a foreign country.
Yeah.
I've been to Edinburgh and I had to ask the guy a number of times, "Excuse me, can you slow down? I didn't quite understand your
I remember talking to a lady about the movie Braveheart, a Scottish lady Braveheart in Ireland. I couldn't understand half what she said, but she was very energetic about it, and she loved meeting us.
Right. So, yeah.
If I had no idea what she was saying to a certain degree, it was right, like, yeah.
Exactly, and yeah. It's embarrassing because it's all supposed to be the Queen's English, you know?
I could go on and on about England. I spent a lot of time in England, so. Carl, if you could give our listeners one piece of advice that they could take action on, assuming if they were going to be doing international business sales, what would that be?
I think it's this. If you're trying to sell and trial and do business in the Far East, don't expect the immediate sale. You have to be in it for the long run. Okay, if there's a product and you can't catch that order or that business this time around, there's always a next time. The Chinese and the Asians will keep the door open. Okay, so you don't get the sale now. You never close the opportunity. You keep the opportunity open. It's not a huge catastrophic failure if you don't get an order from a vendor for a particular product when you're competing with so many other companies and they decided the other company's product is better than yours this time. Continue the good, you know, the good battle. Continue to sell, continue to market, continue to open up those markets, and continue to actually use social media to show them in public speaking why your products are better than others. It's a never-ending battle. You're battling to gain trust. You're battling to improve your company's services in that country. It's better to be visible with the social media than to just say, well, we lost the order. We don't have to talk to them anymore. No, actually, that's not correct. You can stay in the loop. You should stay in the loop. Things change often.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's great advice for anybody, actually.
It's great advice when you're looking for a job, for sure.
Oh, yeah, that too, which is, yeah, absolutely. So, Carl, how can people find you online if they want to come see you speak?
Right. So I started to deliver public speaking in 2003. So I've actually been doing this 13 years, over 13 years, with over about 750 presentations on three continents and in two languages. In China, you can find my videos on Youku by searching my Chinese name, Wei Kar. Wei Kar is my Chinese name. In English, on YouTube, some on Vimeo, but mostly on YouTube, I have about 120 videos on YouTube about mobile payment, mobile security, and mostly in the smart card world, and also this eSIM technology, and also wearable smartwatches. You can find that on YouTube under my full name, well, my name, Carl J. Weaver. You can find lots of my videos. I also have a meetup group here in Washington State for payments and security. I call it NFC. I call it NFC TEE, NFC payment and TEE security. And you can find that on meetup.com. And I'm all over Google. It's very, very important that you're always using social media because social media is what millennials use, and you're going to be dealing with more and more millennials. So it's important that you're out there pressing the flesh, in what you do.
Excellent, excellent. Carl, thanks so much for visiting us here in the United States.
And well, I'm in Seattle actually, but I jumpshoot Asia a lot. You'd be amazed how international Seattle is. Seattle has a lot of Asian culture here. So I just love living here. So does my family.
Seattle's a terrific city. I love it. I love it. Hey, Carl, thanks a lot for visiting us here in Sales Babel.
Thank you, Pat. You have a good afternoon.
We may be talking about Asia and Europe, but let me tell you about here in the United States. It's probably true in other Western countries that most corporations don't make pop decisions. If you're in the B2B space, it takes a long time for them to get their act together and make a decision to buy you, so it requires a huge amount of patience on your end. People want to gain trust in you before doing business. They want substance. They're not going to make a quick decision. So all of these seven steps that Carl mentioned is also going to be applicable to you. To find Carl and to connect with him, you can find him in the show notes at www.salesbabble.com/177. And if you got any questions or comments, don't hesitate. Don't hesitate to email me. You may have noticed that we have a new email system and the emails are more economic and hopefully they're clearer to read. So if you've got a question or a comment for me, just hit the reply button and it should come right back to me. Or you can go to the website at salesbabble.com where we have an awful lot of free sources. All our back catalog is on there. Download it because you may find the solution to exactly what you're struggling with today. Next week, we're going to have Eric Twiggs on, and he's going to talk about how to stop procrastinating, which is probably the biggest problem we have in sales. As an old friend used to tell me, never did vacuuming look so good when you had to do sales. Just, I don't know if that makes sense to you, but think about it. Until next week, take care and have a highly successful selling day.
Thank you for listening to the Sales Babble podcast. Find us at www.salesbabble.com. Thank you.